Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to the Cutting Edge Install Podcast, brought to you by Omnicubed, where innovation meets installation and everything in between. It's been a couple of weeks since we've had one of these, but it's great to be back. Who am I? In case you've never seen this, well, I'm Merv Campbell. I'm your host, and it's an absolute pleasure that you join us today. What's this podcast all about? Well, it's about celebrating. We are in the year of celebrations, and this podcast is no different than that. We're celebrating pros, installers, experts, and game changers, and we've got not one, but two game changers on the show today, so it's going to be real good. We're going to dive into stories, we're going to share insights, and we're going to have fun. And if you've seen anything off the World Cup, you'll know that the Europeans like to have fun, specifically the Scots. But the problem is, no one has seen the Irish have fun, but that'll come possibly in 4 years if we actually qualify. But who knows? So whether you're on the job, whether you're on the road, or you're just looking to stay sharp, you have come to the right place. So let's get cracking. I'm going to have you guys introduce yourselves. Tell us your name, tell us your company, what you're about, and then we're going to get into some pretty good questions here today on this podcast. So take it away.
My name's Sebastian with Murillo's Tile and Marble. I am Jesse's son, co-owner of the business. Yeah, this is Jesse right
Hey, Merv, thank you for inviting us. My name is Jesse Murillo, and I'm the owner of Murillo's Tile and Marble.
Okay, so then I got to start where it started with Jesse. Yeah. Sorry, you got to wait a turn. But can you take us back to the beginning? Take us back to the start. How did you get involved in the tile and stone industry?
Well, this is a long story, but I'm going to try to do it short. I started in Mexico. My dad, he worked in construction all his life, and he taught me how to float. I know how to float. We used to float, put cement plaster in our house. So that's how that opened the door for me. I came to San Diego when I was 16 years old, and I was looking for work, and I saw a guy, he was doing tile in a house, and I told him, hey, I know how to float. He didn't trust me because I was too young. I was 16.
Oh, man.
But he gave me the chance, and so I started floating, and he liked it. So, and then awesome. Everything started right there. He liked it the way I was plastering, putting cement in the shower, and he hired me as a helper. So I started as a helper. It was in a year, but I think it was in 80-something, 86, something like that. But I was kind of young, like 16 years old. And that's how I started. I started as a helper on the tile.
Wow.
And then I started learning, and then I started setting tile myself. And later, and around 2000, that's when I started on my own. And, so I was a tile setter. And then I was installing one day in a house, and it was a company. They were doing the countertops. And that's when they caught my attention. It was something different than tile. So I liked it, and I started selling at that time, not fabricating. I was just selling it. And and then I had to learn the trade.
Awesome. Awesome. So you're learning, you're a 16-year-old young whippersnapper learning the trade. Is there anything from even in around then when you were first learning that has kind of stuck with you even till today?
Well, to learn the trade, something that stuck to me is just to do quality. The guy that taught me how to do tile, he was neat with his tools, and he taught me how to be a helper first, and then I worked with pretty good installers, and they taught me to do the best. Always do your best. Always do quality and give customer whatever you promise to your customer, that's what you do. So that's something that stuck to me, and that's one of the values that I hold on to give the customer what I promise.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Hey, if there's one thing that sticks, it might as well be the best thing that sticks. So that's pretty legit. That's so cool. So you're saying around 2000, you thought about you were starting the new company, but What made you want to do that? Like, was there a specific reason? Is it just the fact of you wanted to be your own boss? Was there any specifics you want to tell us on that?
I think it was always on me. Like I said, my dad, he worked in construction and he was working for by himself. And I was working for, like I said, I was working for different companies. And I think I was pretty good on my trade.
Yeah, so, there you go.
So every time they left me by myself. They just got in the morning. They told me, okay, you're going to do this. You're going to do that. And they left. And I thought to myself, I mean, I'm doing the job myself. I'm doing everything myself. And I think I can do it on my own. So that's how it started. And but I always had the I think it's a calling. I think it's a calling when you want to be your own business entrepreneur. Yeah. It's something that is in you. And I always wanted to do it and I give it a try in 2000.
Awesome. We all know starting a business can be difficult. What were some of the challenges that you like faced even in those early years of building that business up?
Wow, it was a lot of challenges. First of all, it was the language barrier. I only speak Spanish.
Yes.
And I don't speak perfect English, but that was one of the barriers. The other challenge, it was, I was kind of young at the time. And and the challenge, it was to, credibility.
Yes.
Because I was trying to work as a contractor, and I used to go to the job site, and all the contractors, they have the big trucks, nice trucks with all the tools. And I show up with my little Camry with all my labels, all my tools.
Yep. Oh, man.
So, and I was claiming that I was the best. I show up in my Camry. So it was a big challenge to people, the contractors, to believe in myself. But little by little, we opened doors and now that we are here.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Yeah. I always try to tell my kids, like, you don't always judge a book by its cover. And so like those early years, that obviously was for you where, yeah, these guys are coming in with their big fancy trucks and everything else. But sometimes it's like, I like to play golf. And sometimes it's hilarious when you get to the golf course and you're with another, you may be playing by yourself and there's two or three other people and they show up with like the best clubs, the best clothing, the best shoes that money will buy, you know, and they stand in the first tee box and they completely shank it. And you're like, you kind of laugh on the inside going, really? I'm standing here with clubs from eBay and hand-me-downs. And like shoes that if it's wet, my feet get wet. So I know to wear like multiple pairs of socks. And it's like, seriously, guys, really? Yeah. So yeah, a little tip for people. Don't always judge a book by its cover. Yeah. Talk to the person, give them the chance. But no, it's funny. Obviously, every business has to evolve. It can't stay where it was. It's got to grow and change and whatever else. But what are some of the biggest turning points that shaped you guys into what it is today?
I think you have to evolve. You have to evolve, and we start at the beginning. It was a learning season. Like I say, I was good at my trade, but to get better, I think you have to grow yourself because you're gonna hit the ceiling. You're gonna hit the ceiling, and I think I hit the ceiling too many times, and. But I came to the realization that you have to get better yourself in order to grow the business. And I think that's what we did. I started educating myself, not just to be a good tire seller, not just to be a good fabricator, but to be a good business man. Because remember, I started as a tire seller. I didn't start as a business. I didn't finish my high school or any of my education. So I started as a selling tile. I was on my knees, but I had to learn the business. So I think that's one of the biggest things, to educate yourself.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's awesome. Yeah, and every day should be a school day, so to speak. Like, learn and grow, and you have to evolve with it, with everything that's changing. If you get stuck in the rut, then you're not. If you're not growing, you're dying. So that's so important. Okay, we've had difficult periods. There's been, 2008, the housing crash. Even recently, things have been pretty difficult in regards to stone and tile fabrication and installation. But when you've gone through those difficult times, what helped you to keep moving forward and not just go, you know what, I'm done, I don't want to do this anymore?
I think it has to do with your mentality. You have to prepare yourself, your mental. And like I said at the beginning, this is a calling. That it's not, when you open a business, it's not just because of the money. Obviously, we all want to make money, but it's something that is in you. And when you have it, you have to prepare yourself mentally, because not every year is good. Not every month you make the money. So you have to be ready, and mentally, you have to be ready to endure. It's like a marathon. When you're running, your mind is telling you to stop, but you got to keep running.
Running.
It's the same thing. Sometimes you go home without a check, your wife and your mind says you need to do something differently. But when you believe in yourself and you believe in the business and you know that you can do it, I think it's, everything has to do with your mind.
And it's, the mind is a battlefield for many different reasons. And like you said, that marathon runner, it's the battle of the mind. Like, the legs will move if you tell them to move, but it's got to be in your head that's telling those legs to move forward, which is really difficult. Oh dear. Well, Sebastian, you've sat there very quiet. Now it's your turn. He's like, oh man, do I have to? No, I'm just kidding. It's all good. So you have your father. He's getting the business. You're growing up around it. What was that like? What's that like to watch your dad, come home without a paycheck, or the struggles and the strains or the difficulties? Like, what, from your perspective, what was that like to grow up around?
I think when he was talking about mentality and always pushing forward and staying positive, that reflected in my childhood by not knowing anything that may have been going wrong and actually having a good childhood growing up.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think growing up, all I remember is, always having the cool toys, the motorcycles, and going out doing fun things on the weekend because he had the time to give us.
Yep.
And then, but then slowly as you start to grow up, I did start to see the struggles of the business, the good sides of the business, see how, say in the 2008 financial crisis, there were some troubles with the business that we went through. And in that time I was a child, but I would have never knew it. They spun it as a fun story that we're going to move to a different house, we're just going to change a couple things, even though that they were going through a very difficult time. To me, the childhood was always very good, and I would go help them at job sites. I never saw a difficult struggle. I always saw a good time at the house, a good father, a good upbringing. I never saw the difficult times at all, actually.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great example to all of us, even as parents, with our kids. Not that we shelter them to the fact that, they're basically wrapped in cotton wool and then when trials come, they don't know what to do with them. But I think when it comes to like financial things, it's really important to protect them at a young age.
Around the age that was going on, like around 12, 13, is when I would start going with him to more jobs on the weekend, day after school. And what helped a lot in our upbringing and kind of understanding the business and kind of instilling an entrepreneur mindset in us was talking very truthfully about the situations he was in, where the business was at, what his were, what the were for the family, and involving me as the older son at the time. You know, the our younger sister, we have two sisters, weren't involved, obviously, but we matured quickly, learning everything about the business. And then it was just kind of like learning lessons that you didn't take in at the time as a young child. But I remember I remember listening about everything that was going on. And that really makes you appreciate it once you're older at this stage, looking back to then.
Yeah, totally. That's really good.
Pushing.
Yeah, that's helpful. So growing up, obviously you're in it, you're doing it after school, you're kind of there in the weekends. Was there ever like a click point or a light bulb moment that went, I'm actually going to do this, I'm going to continue doing this? Or did it just sort of naturally happen?
For a long time, I didn't want to do it at all.
Okay.
It was not, this was not something I wanted to do at
all. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a very difficult business, very hard, very physically demanding. Like he said, he learned from the beginning, from the start, from the bottom up, right? From the tile setting, working with his hands on his knees, setting tile. And so he believed that was the only way to learn the business as well. I needed to start from the bottom, fabricating in the shop with all of the other guys and turning, with dust and dirt all over you. That's just, that's how it was. And so I didn't like that, obviously, at first.
Yeah, totally.
That's not fun if you if you've ever been inside of a fabrication shop all day. It's not fun for the most part. At least not how they were working back in the day. It's not the best work environment out there, I would say. Now, obviously, there's a lot of changes. Shops are very clean. Water systems all throughout. But back in the day, it wasn't like that. So it was a clicking point, probably. Once I was in past high school and it was time, you know, to get serious about your career, I tried several things on my own, whether it was a business, Etsy business, trying to do things on my own.
Okay.
And, slowly, just as time went on, working in the shop, going out into the field more, meeting with clients, it was just something that grew on me. Without me even realizing it, it was just one day to the next, I was in love with the business. I don't even know at what point it happened. Maybe just slowly taking on more responsibility, moving out of the fabrication side, started to see the opportunity that there was here. And yeah, I just went all in. I decided to go all in and help grow the business to where we're at right now.
Awesome. That's so cool. Yeah, that's legit. Obviously, your dad's there. He's working his tail off. He's doing things. Is there stuff that he taught you sort of back at the beginning that kind of like the question I asked him that shape how you do your work today?
Quality over everything.
There you go.
Making sure everything's perfect. Customer first, even if that means you give in to something that you may believe is wrong, but the customer believes is right. It's kind of, you have to go to those lengths, losing money on a project, making sure the customer is happy. You have to go to those lengths, staying extra time in the shop because you promised a specific date to a client already. All of those qualities is what has stuck with me, is kind of being a perfectionist as much as you can. And everything that you do. That's definitely the thing that has stuck with me. And grit. Because even together in the business over the last 4 years now, we faced some difficult times together. And working alongside your father isn't easy as well.
No, I wouldn't think so.
We face difficult times with each other, but we've made it. I've always stuck happy around each other.
Good.
And it's not easy for a father and son to be in business together, but we've worked until now. So,
yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure I could work with my dad, to be honest. But you know, it takes a I probably could, but there would be moments where there would be a little bit of clashing at times, a little bit of sparks.
A lot of clashing, but you get through it.
You get through it as well, which is kind of awesome, because the next question I'm going to ask is, Jesse.
Yes.
What is it like? What's it been like watching your son and that next generation kind of step into the business and help carry that along?
Well, that's, I think it's a blessing. I think that's the word came to me. It's a blessing. See them develop themselves. Now it's not only Sebastian, I have a daughter. She helps me here in the office.
Awesome.
And something that I started from the beginning, like he said, I was on my knees selling tile. And when I see them, now they're running the business. My daughter and Sebastian, they took over basically. I'm just here. I just came from a paycheck. Right.
Oh, yes, the tides have turned. Oh, that's awesome.
No, I still work, but when I see them, when they're planning, when they're going over the finances, the scheduling, and when I see them, it's a blessing.
Yeah.
How they, I know we still struggle. It's not easy. We still have a hard time, but it's not the same as the way I started. So for me, see them developing, it's a blessing. So I can see a bright future for them, because I mean, if I got here to this point, I know they can go farther than me, because they're smarter. They're smarter, and they have they're pretty smart, and so it's a blessing to see them.
No, that's cool. That's awesome. Then, kind of following on from that, because obviously, it's a new generation. Things are done differently. Jesse, kind of thinking back when you first started to where things are now and kind of like the stone and tile industry, what's changed? Like in your perspective, what's different now than it was sort of back in those sort of 2000s or even back in the 80s whenever you first got going as a 16-year-old?
I think it's a lot of technology right now. It's a lot of new tools. You can make your life easier with a lot of tools, but everything was by hand. Everything you fabricate by hand. When I started on the stone business, I was cutting with the skill saw. I was cutting in the backyard with the skill saw, and so everything has changed from now. Now there's a lot of tools, a lot of technology. So it makes your life easier. So I think that's what it has changed.
Awesome. Sebastian, then thinking upon where you are now, then what, like from your perspective, because you've grown up, you've obviously been that younger guy and now you're, you know, your dad's collecting the paycheck, so he's leaving you to run it. What changes, kind of like what he's talking about, but what changes have made the biggest impact in how you guys operate today?
Definitely the tooling and the technology, how he said. I mean, he started in the backyard with the skill saw cutting with the slab laid on 2x4s. That's crazy compared to now we have our 5-axis GMM machine that cuts everything off of digital templates. You know, we still use physical templates, but everything gets transferred into the program and the machine does all the cutting and we're hands off. Everything comes off ready just to glue, a little bit of touch-ups, and the top board.
Yeah.
Back then, everything was done by hand, and I witnessed a lot of fabrication by hand, and a lot of dust being produced in shops. Now, the amount of work that we're able to put out with less, like, waste of material, less pollution, sort of say, with dust exiting the shop. It's crazy the amount of progress we've made with the tooling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
And then like installations, totally. I remember gathering 10, 15 guys, and I would be in the back helping when they were taking big islands or complicated pieces, you know, and everybody yelling in the way, causing a disturbance in houses and in the whole neighborhood, really. Three other cars showing up, you know, to a house to install. And that when you have, like, there's a reason we're on the podcast with you and you guys are such a big company is because the tooling, we can unload an island with two guys onto that cart, that AT2 cart, right?
AT2, yep.
And you just wheel it in. You use the suction cups that go, the sink savers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have a lot of confidence that you can install it with your team of three guys or your team of four guys with no issues. Whereas before you would be scrambling to find a lot of help and you would be nervous all the way until that piece was finally set.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we have no nerves at all at any installation. I think that's something a lot of other fabricators have struggled with is having a lot of nerves and an installation day that something may break, something may crack. There may be an issue. And I think that has been solved like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. And it's speaking from our perspective, that's why we do what we do is to help fabricators and installers. Obviously, you know, we're a business, we're here to make money, but my passion is like getting guys home at night the way they left in the morning.
Yeah.
And you talk about like fear and worry. As a business owner, as kind of like the contractor having these guys install, all it takes is for one guy to make a slip their own way and, you know, either the stone's on top of him or, you know, he's busted his back or his biceps now down by his wrist. So like kind of going back to the old way of like everything was done by hand, it doesn't have to be that way anymore. In fact, it's better if it's not done by hand because that's where mistakes happen. And so even in installation, getting the right tools for the job is like you said, it takes away all that fear, all that worry. So, yeah, no, that's a very important piece. And even the fact of, like you talk about all the dust and everything that's going around, like that's a big thing at the minute in our industry that everyone's like freaking out about, worried about. And so, you know, the more we embrace technology and some of these things, the better it is.
Yeah.
But that's hard because some people love doing it the old school ways and there's this like tension that comes between the two. But
yeah,
overall, definitely getting dialed into the new technology is going to be a blessing for sure. So
that's a hard thing, the tooling, actually, to get involved in the industry. And with our guys that we've had over the years, it was actually a very difficult process. Like you said, they're very stuck in their old ways on how things should be done. And those old ways are very dangerous. It puts them at risk, puts, you know, everybody at risk.
It's dangerous. Well, if you if some of your people are still that way, send them my way. I've got I have pictures and I have like case studies and stuff that we've done for people where they can't work anymore.
They've literally
one guy I can think of in particular, he had to retire at 32. His back was gone, his arms, his shoulders were completely shot, his knees were, he could hardly stand up, and you're going at 32.
You're like, man,
you've got your whole life ahead of you.
We know a couple of a lot of people that have gotten messed up too, unfortunately. I actually had a big accident carrying a slab where I had a miter that cut my hand almost cut my thumb off, actually.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Not fun. There you go. Get the right tools, be protected. It takes, like, I get it. Guys want to like just, oh, let's get the job done, you know, quick as we can. That's when things happen.
That's when they happen.
Yep. It's when you drive your car at 120 miles an hour is when accidents happen. If you stick to the speed limit, 9 times out of 10, you're okay.
Yeah.
So fast is, my boss tells me, fast is slow and slow is fast. And that works across multiple different things.
Yeah.
And especially an installation of all this heavy stuff. So, okay. Walk me through a day. Obviously, well, you're going to find out. This is Monday. It's Monday morning. Walk us through a day for your crew, from kind of loading up in the shop and then setting that final piece. What does it look like?
So let's just take today, for example. Mm-hmm. The guys have a kitchen that they're working on that must be completed for install tomorrow.
Okay.
So a couple of those pieces are still on the table that need to, some finishing up with polishing, mm-hmm. and cleaning up on the underside so that everything's nice and clean when we install it.
Okay.
Jesse will be out at a estimate and a template later today.
Okay.
And we have some slabs that need to get loaded on the table. So myself will go out there with another guy while everybody else is still working on the countertops and mm-hmm. start loading the next project as I'm in here, you know, programming all the new measurements into there.
Yeah.
And then, the day will go pretty much up until 4 with fabrication. It should be complete today.
Okay.
We have at least 2 to 3 more slabs cut, ready to begin getting worked on tomorrow, mm-hmm. as an installation is going on. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
See, that's the day in the life of an installer. So, you know, it's all good. When you arrive at the job site, what are this kind of the first things that you check before bringing material inside?
I always go inside, check the subtop itself, the plywood, make sure everything's good, that it's set properly. Sometimes they're not nailed in all the way. Okay. Check the sink, bring the sink out, open the opening for the sink, mm-hmm. the opening that's needed for the stove if it hasn't been cut out yet. So if it's an inset type of stove, make sure we cut that out. Talk with the homeowner about their faucets, where they're going to want them, how many. And mm-hmm. then just make sure that there's nothing in the way when carrying the pieces in, nothing in the way outside of the house as well. Just take a good look at your area. If there's a big island, how are you going to park the truck is very important to unload mm-hmm. it. Just making sure everything's nice and clear out of the way, double checking measurements if you have to on some pieces. Mm-hmm. And then just start bringing them in one by one, gluing them down with silicone. Countertops first, any piece that needs a seam that gets done together first.
Yeah.
And then the remaining pieces, if there's a full backsplash, we go ahead and check our templates for the backsplash or make templates for the backsplash.
Uh-huh.
Most of the time we will cut full backsplashes or 6-inch backsplashes on site. Other times we bring back our templates, cut everything so that we make no dust at all at the person's house. And then we go back and install backsplashes, do all the finishing touches with caulking, cleaning, sealing, awesome. If it needs it.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
That's good. That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Obviously, that's kind of like, I hate to say it, kind of a fantasy world, because even though, like, I've worked in different job sites and, you know, we've cleared the way, we're ready to come in, and the next thing, you know, electricians have got flipping leads hanging everywhere. The plumber comes in and just sets his box right where you need to go.
Yeah.
Someone's got junk all over the cabinets and you're like, I just checked that like five minutes ago.
Yeah, that's obviously, like, communication's very important. Yep. The client beforehand when arriving, mm-hmm. we make sure, will there be any other trades in the house? If there is, we know that when we get there, we'll approach them and talk to them, hey, we're here to install the countertops. They're very heavy. We ask that you're not in our way. Where are you going to be working? If they're going to be working in the kitchen, okay, we're going to work around each other. And I let them know when we come in with pieces, they're heavy. There might be some yelling. If I need you to get out of our way, we need you to get out of our way, please.
Yeah, totally.
But usually, like you said, not every install goes perfect.
No, it doesn't.
You have your pieces that are big that need to get shaped down. Mm-hmm. We always take a table with us. That way we're able to set our material properly, cut it to size when we're on site. Sometimes paneling on the cabinets is loose. You go and you push up a stone against it and the panel just folds in.
It's like, yep.
You don't And you got to figure out whether, you know, we place it back. Do we need to call the contractor to come back to fix it? What's going on here?
Totally.
Other times you did your template, you spoke with the client that everything's ready to go, and you get there and they put mud all over the back wall where you did your template, and they grew it out by a quarter inch. And now everything is off, and you gotta start from scratch, cut everything that size again. And it's a nightmare, but those are things that you have to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And it's I always remember the guy that I was with a couple of times, he would always ask the electrician, do you mind fitting the light fixture that's going above the island before I put the stone on? Because I don't want you to use it as a dance floor when I've actually put the stone up there. Please. It doesn't matter how much rhino board or paper or whatever, they always seem to end up going through that. And it's like, are you kidding me right now? Like, it's seriously.
It's not fun. No.
Oh, it's not fun at all.
Yeah.
It's not fun at all. Kind of for both of you, obviously, you know, Jesse, Sebastian, kind of thinking yourselves here, what's one install that really, really challenged your team, and what did you learn from it?
I think the porcelain job. I think we did a recent job where we wrapped almost the full front balcony, a terrace, and the back patio with porcelain all over the house. Okay. All of it was on the about 10 foot high on the low side, all the way up to about three stories, where the highest point was, that we installed some porcelain slabs. And everything needed to be book matched perfectly to the dot. Every single last piece had veins that flowed through it without missing a spot perfectly. That was probably one of our most challenging installs, having to set up the scaffolding, go up the scaffolding with such large pieces. Yeah. And it being porcelain, such a delicate material that could break at any time, it being a black material, and we were outside, making it extremely hot, was also a big challenge. And we actually did the install with a team of newer guys that we have that we're training, that we want them to be able to handle a project like that. So we did a lot of hands off behind them, guiding them as they were installing it. That was a very difficult project for us, but it went pretty smooth. It went good, but it was a difficult project, our most difficult project this year for sure.
Yeah, that's where, again, having the right tools, RS3 line for porcelain is, you know, the way to go for thin material, making that rigid frame where, again, takes the stress away.
Yep.
When you start getting into heights, that's where it's like, oh boy. But there are, you know, there's workarounds, there's things to do. And then throw in a newer crew. Wow, you guys are definitely brave, I can tell you. Sure.
Yeah.
Sink or swim, guys, sink or swim. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Oh dear. Yeah. So the newer crew, they're working. Are there things that you see with newer installs that are like mistakes that you're seeing with kind of these newer guys that are, you know, you're going, really? Like, why did you do that?
The attention to detail kind of just is still lacking every now and then. But everything is still coming out to our standard. And then when we are there, when they install, always one of us will be there when we install or we'll be there shortly after they finish installing. To quality control and make sure everything's good. And say they did leave a mistake, we fix it to make sure that it's perfect. And then we make sure to let them know what they did and how to fix it moving forward, because we do expect for them to leave the work exactly as
it should be,
expected to be, as it should be, as our clients, you know, as what they deserve to be getting for the price that they're paying. Yeah.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. But they're quick learners.
Yeah, that's good. That's awesome.
Yeah, we
they have
the challenge.
They have two really good teachers.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Jesse.
Yes.
Obviously, there's problems. And speaking from all of your experience, where do these problems start on a project? Is it with like customers' expectations? Is it the templating? Is it fabrication? Is it material choice? Is it install? Where do most common problems begin?
Customers and expectations.
Okay. Wow, that was very fast, straight out of the block. Didn't even have to think. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, material, we know when I pick up the material, I mean, I know if, whether I bring it to the shop or not, I can tell if it's good, if the piece is good or bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, most of the problems is sometimes the customers and the expectations. Okay. Sometimes I go to do a template, get measurements at the customer, they're expecting us the next day. So the process or customers, they change their minds like in a second. Yeah. We had an issue with the customer. She select the material. She loved the material. Once we got it, we fabricated it, we install it. And when she saw it, she started crying. Like she just started crying. She didn't like it.
And, oh, dear.
So, yeah, basically, most of the problems is with the customers. They're vulnerable. They change their mind very easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of Facebook posts recently where the customers come in with a flash lamp and or a flashlight or a torch and a roll of painter's tape. And there's more blue spots all over the stone than there is actual stone, and you're like, oh my word, that poor guy. I feel so sorry.
Yeah, we did a job a couple of years, like 3 years ago. We did the installation and we were supposed to go the next day. When we show up to the house, the countertop has blue tape all over the
everywhere. Floor.
There was no countertop. It was all
blue. Yeah, pretty much. It was all blue.
And we had to go through one by one showing them that is part of the stone, that's a little diamond. That's also part of the stone. That's a little diamond. That's also part of the stone. That's the stone. That's not a scratch. No, nope, that's part of the stone. That's a fissure. That's part of the stone. Yeah. Customers are tricky to deal with.
Nowadays, a lot of the customers, they know what to say.
A lot of them are educated.
They educate themselves, but there's a lot of them that they don't know what they're expecting. So those are the major ones.
They
don't know.
And more difficult.
Yeah, when you show up, they're expecting something different. I don't know.
They don't know what they're expecting. Yeah. They're surprised by everything, really, yeah.
Yeah. And it's stone. It's like, what do you expect?
Yeah.
It's not a tile that's being pressed and printed. It's actually stone. So hello. But
put together, polished.
Totally. Okay. Kendall, this is the last question and it's for both of you. So you can go one at a time. If a younger person or a family member, is listening to this and they want to give this trade a shot. What's one bit of advice that you would give to that younger person today?
I think to educate themselves, learn the trade, but learn the business. I think it's very important to learn how to handle money, run a business, like a business management and all that, because I mean, you can be a good worker, but if you don't know how to handle money, you're gonna hit a wall. You need to be able to manage the business, to work with people. So I think it's a key to learn all those things, because like I said in the beginning, I learned from the bottom, a lot of mistakes, and I'm pretty sure they're going to make mistakes, but I think they're going to grow faster. They're going to experience success faster than we are, because I mean, it took me a long time to learn.
So
I think that's my advice. Educate.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Advice to anybody wanting to come into the trade would be to definitely take a big overview look at what the business is, where they want to join and be a part of, to really think about it, because it's a hard business. It's a difficult business. I don't think easy in any spot that you enter. So I think a piece of advice would be ready to work hard in any part of the business. Getting clients isn't easy. Advertising isn't easy. Fabrication isn't easy. Mm-hmm. Picking up material isn't easy. Doing templates isn't easy. Nothing at all in this business I feel is easy. Just be ready to work hard.
Yeah. Hard work and determination.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jesse, Sebastian, thank you so much. This has been awesome. I can't believe it's 49 minutes have rolled by. My word. Time flies when you're having fun, eh?
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, it's time for us to get to work. So this is a wrap for the Cutting Edge Install podcast today. If you've enjoyed this episode, please, by all means, subscribe, follow, leave us a quick review. If you would like to be on the podcast, like these two fine gentlemen here, just pop us an email or, you know, write us on social media, whatever. Keep an eye out. These drop every other Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific State Time. For more about OmniCubed, the tools that we design that we are trying to help fabricators and installers with and do their work safer every day, check out omnicubed.com. And until the next time I see you all, stay safe and cheerio. Goodbye.